Hello and welcome everybody to another episode of Pod Strickland. I'm your host, Schwinny Poo, in this episode 274. I am joined, I would say as always, but it's been a while, by my co-host, that's at Prez underscore Presidente Prez. How are you doing this evening?
I'm good. Just want Knicks fans to know the Knicks are 2-0 this year when I'm in the building, so you're welcome.
Yeah, I think your leadership when they were down 19 to the Wizards is what really brought them back in that game. But before we get started, I have to make a few announcements. The first being that the Strickland has an Instagram. Check that out. That is at thestrick.land on Instagram. We're posting all types of new content on there on the daily. The Strickland also has a YouTube channel where you may or may not be watching this podcast. If you are watching it on YouTube, please hit like and then subscribe to the channel. If you're not already subscribed, that would be a big help to us. The Strickland also has new merchandise, which you should check out. You can find that on our store on the website. There's all types of new shit, and we got more coming out in the coming weeks, so keep an eye out for that. And then finally, the Strickland has a Patreon, which you can subscribe to. There are a number of tiers. There's a $6 tier that gets you access to Pod Strickland, this podcast that I host every Friday, although this time it's going to drop on a Sunday or a Monday with Prez. You also get access to the mailbag that comes out every other week, hosted by Andrew Steele, a.k.a. Doug, a.k.a. the Doug Bag. You also get access to the Strickland Discord, where the conversation never stops. So there are further tiers. There's a $9 tier that comes with access to Strickland Roll, my solo pod, where I rant and rave about the Knicks even more. You also get access to wonderful weekly premium articles by Matthew Miranda, one of the best in the business. There are further tiers. There's a $15 tier, $30 tier, $50 tier, and $100 tier that's come with a variety of additional benefits like listening in on pod recordings, merchandise discounts, and even potentially co-host a podcast alongside yours truly one day, whether you choose to subscribe or not. None of this would be possible without you. So without further ado, let's get started. The Knicks. The Knicks are 2-0. They are not 2-0. They're 2-0 since the All-Star break, since they got back, as Prez noted, his presence allowed them.
So inspirational.
Yeah, just very inspirational, appearance.
From the upper bowl
from Prez. They took care of business last night. I mean, they just absolutely beat the fucking living piss out of the Pelicans in what was kind of just an embarrassing game for the Pelicans and thrilling if you're a Knicks fan. And I tweeted this last night, but the Knicks are on a 52.6 winning a game, 52.6 win pace since they made the rotation changes, which were namely dropping Rose, Fournier, and Cam Reddish, who is now no longer a member of the Knicks. However you feel about that. And they replaced them with initially Deuce McBride, now Josh Hart, and Quentin Grimes in the starting lineup. That's going back. That's 25-14. That's 39 games. That's the majority of the season. That's almost half the season at this point. This team is very good. And they're 5-0 since they got Josh Hart. And if RJ, look, he had a good game yesterday. And I actually, against the Wizards, obviously, he wasn't the greatest offensive game. I think you've seen a tangible difference in his defensive awareness and effort in these last couple of games. That was always the biggest thing for me, because I do think the offense, he'll figure it out. I think that's coming around. I'm not that worried about his offense. I'm worried about the defense.
It was cool to see, because the first game I was at, like, he was getting fucking fried by everybody on the Wizards, mm-hmm. particularly Kuz, who went off. But, like, it wasn't even like Kuz was hitting. I mean, he was hitting tough shots because that's what he does. But he was, like, just breaking RJ's ankles, just blowing by RJ. And I'm like, okay. You can't stay in front of somebody who's almost fucking 7 feet. Like, so you have trouble with the tall guys. You have trouble with the fast guys. Who don't you have trouble with right now? But like he's we've talked about it. He's not so athletically gifted that he can just be on cruise control on defense, but he's not like me out there. Right. Like if he's like, okay, let me commit and like use my mind.
Yeah, instead I mean, of we've just, seen it. Right. We've seen it. So that's why like it was frustrating. And so seeing those two games.
And in particular, real quick, the thing that was good to see, like he didn't get lit the fuck up by Kuz, but you're seeing him just like that minimal threshold of like give them a little trouble on ball, and then more importantly, arguably, is just off ball. Yeah. Like he's never like we've seen him do stuff off ball in these last couple games that he's never done, even when he was playing good defense. Like when his good defense back in the day was like, oh, I'm a fucking brick wall. Have fun trying to get through me as a help defender. Now he's like, not all the time, but like, you know, stealing some pages out of Deuce and Quickly's book and just getting some deflections and just doing shit like that. And he's never been a big events guy, but I'll take it.
Yeah, and I think more importantly, look, he didn't close the game against Washington. You could tell he was on the sideline. He was not happy about it, but he responded the way you want somebody to respond, right? He came out yesterday and was great. And, you know, he hit a three against Washington. I think his jumper looks better. He's moving better again after the All-Star break. I don't know what the fuck was going on with him for the All-Star break, but he was just moving, like, just way slower, and it was not smooth at all. It just didn't look right. He looked a lot more fluid against Washington. He looked even better yesterday. So, again, going back to it, like, I mean, if he gets his shit together, I've been saying this for a while, like, there's a little bit of, like, last year's Celtics to this team, you know, similarly acquiring kind of, like, a big upgrade to the rotation at the deadline. And I just think, like, look, I don't know what this team can do. I don't know. I
don't know what the fuck you do with this team if RJ Barrett is playing offense and defense, if you're another team and you don't have an MVP candidate. Like, I'm going to just say it straight up. Like, I didn't watch the Pelicans game, but, like, once I saw that RJ was actually scoring in the first half for once, I was like, oh, this is going to be a wire-to-wire blowout just because how everybody else is playing, and you add that on top of that, then just fucking RIP, bro, unless you have, like, Jason Tatum or Joel Embiid or some shit, or Giannis.
Yeah, and I think that's really where I'm ultimately at. Like, I think this team is just really good, and they got better, obviously, with Hart acquisition. So, you know, I think it's time to stop, like, couching.
Happy to be here. Happy to be here.
Yeah. This team just has a lot more talent than that. Look, real quick, we were joined right after we started by Simon, who is here now. Simon Sharon Gordon. He does social media content for the NBA. Simon, how are you doing?
What's up, guys? Sorry to jump in late.
All good.
But yeah, no, it's been a while since I've been on the show, and I think this is probably the best that the Knicks have been since I've ever
been alive
on this pod. So
yeah, no, I mean they're very good. Like I it's not like that's it's really fun to say that. Like, yeah, they're just, what do you think about the Knicks? I'm like, oh, they're just really good. Like,
this was my thing with the Hart acquisition. It was more than just like acquiring him in a vacuum. Like, we needed his skill sets in a vacuum. Like, put aside all the dumb people who are like, oh, why do the Knicks need another guard when Josh Hart is really a wing? But like, so we needed a wing. We got a wing. We needed
Cam
a connector.
Cam can do all this stuff. He's
yeah,
a
Cam and
wing.
His fucking 1.5 rebounds per game can fucking, I don't know, whatever they eat in Portland, fancy hipster donuts or whatever. Like, yeah, have fun with that shit, Cam. Yeah. No, like Hart gives. He not only provides skills we don't need. I mean, we do need, and then doubles down on the offensive rebounding thing. But he also gives Tibbs an option when RJ doesn't have it. And there's a lot of people who kind of took issue with that because it's like, you know, understand he's only 22, RJ. So you still want to make sure he gets the ball and gets his reps and all of that. But like, you know, we've talked about it, right? He's the one young guy who never has really had to earn his minutes straight up. Like, it sounds kind of fucked up, but it's true. Like, he's, because he was the third pick, he just got his minutes and he was good. Most of the time he's fine and good enough to play a lot of minutes on this Knicks team because we haven't been this good before. But like, we're really fucking good now, like you said. And if Tibbs thinks Josh Hart is a better matchup against Kyle Kuzma and Brad Beal, two guys who fucking fried RJ Barrett the last time they played, then he's gonna do that shit until RJ proves it. So like, this is the first time RJ has had to actually, like, he can pout on the bench or whatever, but like, credit to him, right? Like, he came back, and he showed the fuck out versus the Pelicans. Like, that's what you need. Like, you gotta, like, no, bro, this is the part of your career where you're gonna have to earn that shit. Like, you just got paid, but that doesn't guarantee you closing minutes here, not on a good team.
I want to say too, guys, if I can jump in.
Yeah, jump in. Yeah, go for it.
It's interesting to hear you talking about that, because one thing that I know you've both been critical of with Thibs is like how he basically, and everyone has, you know, for his whole coaching career, is just like how he refuses to play young guys. And especially in like development situations like last year when you're not really competing for anything, that's how you develop players, right? But there is a flip side to it where you need to instill some sort of like responsibility. And it sounds like that's what you're alluding to, where it's like, yeah, play the young guys, but at the same time, and don't, you know, don't pull an inexperienced player for making like one mistake or, you know, that kind of shit. But at the same time, like, and this is something that I'm sure we'll get into, but that has been frustrating me to no end with one Jordan Poole, is just like, at a certain point, you need to realize, like, no matter how much talent you have, no matter how big your contract is, like, you have to earn your minutes on a contender. And if you're going to be a contender, you have to do like the little things that winning players do. And I do think the Josh Hart acquisition is a nice kind of like, I don't know, foil to that, where it's like, you know, he's going to do those things. And RJ might have five times the talent of Josh Hart, but like, if he doesn't do Josh Hart things, he might fall behind him in certain spots or not close games.
Yeah, I think ultimately what it is that I don't want to say RJ was getting complacent, but like, the Knicks didn't have options. Like, if you look
right,
basically, like, for December, I think 3rd is when they made the change to now.
And no
to
wing
before,
depth.
Yeah, to before they got Josh Hart, like, they basically were playing, it's Brunson, it's Quickly, Grimes, who was struggling himself offensively, RJ, Randall, and then Mitch was out for a long period of time. So you had like Hart and you had Sims. Like, you were basically playing, I mean, 1-3, you were basically playing four guys. Like, a Deuce would come in and get like a token 5 minutes each half. But like, you were basically riding these guys on the ground. I mean, we had that game against Dallas that we lost, but like, if you go look at the minutes of that game, they're fucking insane. Like, I don't know if I've ever seen anything quite like that. It was like, Quickly had 50 minutes. Everybody else in the starting lineup had like 45, 46, 47 minutes. It was crazy. But like, that's, and the thing is, there are people that were like critical of Tibbs with that. And it's like, well, this is why you should play Cam Reddish. It's like, one, I'm like, dude, Cam Reddish is done. Like, just don't even just accept that and move on. So like, don't even pretend he's an option. And second of all, I'm just like, I mean, there are times where Tibbs plays guys too many minutes for no reason. That was not that this stretch was just not one of those to me, because I'm like, this team is actually good when he plays the good players. So we just need to get another good player. That's like what we need to do. I'm not going to blame him for playing the good players too much, because they're showing me that they might have a level that I didn't think this team this year was going to be at this level, or had the potential to be even at this level, but like, they have done that. And so, you know, you bring Hart in, and I think for RJ, like, it's like, now he has to be on top of it, because if he's not, he knows that like whatever you want to say about, like, you know, his upside, or maybe the best version of RJ the best version of RJ is way better than Josh Hart, and probably maybe arguably even better than I would say Quickly. I think that's a little bit more nuanced, but the point is, like, those guys have a much more solid base. And when you have Brunson and Randall playing at the level they're at, if you're a coach, you might just be like, I actually don't need the potential 22 point per game version of RJ that's an efficient scorer. And like, I don't need that unless he's actually giving that to me, you know? Like, yeah. Because I can just play Quickly and Hart, and I know those two
you
guys.
You know, you can pencil that shit in with those two. They're like clockwork.
Yeah, they're going to play good. They're going to play hard defense. They're going to fight over screens. They're going to go for loose balls. Like, they're going to do all the little things. And like, you needed RJ to be challenged in a way. You needed to challenge him. And like, I think that was an eye opening moment for him. And not even eye opening, because it's like, you know, I'll put it this way. Like, he had a game earlier in the season where he didn't play down the stretch. Then he didn't talk to the reporters afterwards. And then, like, that became a whole story, because he basically, they played, like, you know, they closed with Grimes and Quick over him. And, like, I don't think, like, he responded to that, I think, in a way that showed, like, a little bit of entitlement. I don't think he has that with Hart, because Hart is a veteran, obviously. He's an older player than him. And I just think he has, like, look, he's obviously boys with Brunson. He played with Randall. Like, he already has some institutional credit in the bank, right? And Tibbs, like, worships him, which is insane. But, like, so now when he gets benched, he can't act like it's insulting. Like, yeah, maybe it is insulting, but guess what? You need, like, some of the shit you've been doing this year has been insulting to me. So, like, get your shit together, and you'll close plenty of games.
And the, like, team's been winning, too, and that just, like, takes away your ability to pout when shit's working and everyone else is playing well. And it's like, then it becomes, like, you're singling yourself out a little bit as part of the problem.
Yeah, and to his credit, I said he pouted, but, like, that probably is a strong word. Like,
he was upset that he wasn't.
He was upset. Yeah. And but that was, like, for me, that was really the first time, aside from when he didn't talk to the media. But I don't, we've talked about this on the pod before. I don't really care as much about that.
Yeah,
but, like, to me, I'm like, yo, sometimes you got a bad day at work and you're not trying to talk to nobody. Go home and chill with his 8 bulldogs or whatever he has. Like, that's cool. Go for it. Self-care French matters. What did I say? Oh,
you said
I just said regular. Oh, my bad. I forgot. This is a personal matter for you. The interesting thing to me, that, you know, if I'm just, like, watching where this goes for RJ, like, we're obviously all right. We'll see what happens with him and with the team for the rest of the year and in the playoffs. Like, any number of outcomes wouldn't surprise me. Like, and then after the playoffs, he's going to be playing on a stacked Canadian team as well, right? Like, they did the Team Canada for the first time has done what Team USA did, I want to say, right after the shitty team.
The redeem team?
Yeah, where they're like, you have to commit to 3 years of involvement in this program, and, like, other players can come into that, but it would be, like, you have an advantage if you commit to that. So, like, Wiggins, for example, wasn't on the list, but I'm sure if Andrew Wiggins was like, dude, I want to play, like, they'll let Andrew Wiggins play. But it's like SGA, Jamal Murray. Who else is really good?
Is Dylan Brooks on this team?
Yes, Dylan Brooks is annoyingly good. I mean, he's annoyingly on this team.
Yeah, he's annoyingly a fucking...
No, there's somebody else who's, like, an obviously very talented Canadian player who I'm missing. They have role players too, right? It's like Olynyk and Lou Dort and Dylan Brooks and Ben Mather and Shaden Sharp and all that shit.
Isn't there a big guy? There's some big guy, whatever.
No, their big guy situation kind of sucks. It's like Tristan Thompson might be on their fucking roster, bro. Right. Like, it's like Kelly Olynyk.
Is
Brandon Clark.
Is Nembhard on it?
Nembhard is on it. But they got a lot of guards, so I don't know. I don't know what they're going to do there. Anyway, my point is, like, yo, you're playing on a team with SGA and Jamal Murray. So, like, at best, you're probably third on that pecking order. And you're a far number two if you're number two compared to SGA. So,
is Wiggins playing?
Wiggins is not on the list. He still might play, but he wasn't on the list of Canadian, like, national players to commit. This is going to be a situation that he's going to find himself in, not just with the Knicks, but on Team Canada. And it's like, it's going to be a real inflection point, like, this next 6-7 months, really, for his career. So I think he's the type of dude who usually rises to these occasions, because, you know, RJ Barrett is many things, but he doesn't really, to use my best Dame Lillard voice, run from the grind. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, and I think it's important for him. Like, I'll say one thing in his defense of, like, how he's played this year. I do think, I know, like, you can look at the usage and the shot attempts and all that stuff, and, like, this is not to say that he doesn't get, like, touches. He obviously gets touches. That's not a problem. Yeah. I do think he's less of a priority in that way, and I do think that, like, fucked with him a little bit. Whether that
especially
should or not,
after the second half last year, where his usage was like 100,
right? I whether that should or not is its own thing. Look, he's a 22-year-old kid who, like to your point, you know, he won everything there is to win as a high school player, right? Like, he is like the king of Canada. He leads Canada to the fucking, to beat the stacked ass USA team in whatever championship FIBA thing, whatever. He goes to Duke. He's the number three pick. He comes to New York. He, you know, struggles first year, good second year, helps get them to the playoffs, takes a usage leap last year, gets a contract, and it's like, okay, like, I'm supposed to now, like, me and Julius are supposed to be equals, and like, this is how it's supposed to go. And it wasn't that, right? Because they signed Brunson and shit changed. And I think that, like,
and Julius got back in his bag.
Yeah. And I think, like, that really kind of, I don't want to say fucked with him, but I do think there's a mental adjustment that needs to be made. And hopefully that happened over the All-Star break. But like, they're like, whatever I want to say about Tibbs's offense, like, there is, they do need a third guy. Like, they need RJ to be the third guy, because that's like, what does everybody talk about, right? Oh, well, now, like, this Knicks team, they're really good, but they need a star. I think that's like the wrong way to think about it. I agree, like, yes, they need a star player, but what they need is a third guy that they can just like trust to be an offensive hub consistently. And like, if it's a wing, that's perfect. Guess what? That could be RJ Barrett. But RJ Barrett has to like accept that role and not try to make it and not be upset. And like, the other part about being a third option, right, is this is just my thing, my belief of any basketball team. Any contender, your third option cannot be a bad defender. They can't, because they're not doing enough offensively to offset bullshit defense. If you are a third option, you have to be a good defender. And that's why RJ Barrett not being a good defender this year was such a fucking buzzkill, even while the Knicks were winning, because you're like, what the fuck is going on with this guy? But the good news is, and this is like why I still am like, I don't really have a desire to trade him right now or this offseason or whatever, because like, one, you'd be selling low. Two, like, I know that the progression and his development, you'll get all kinds of, you know, arguments about what has he developed? Does he develop well? Is he the same player? I think he has developed. I just think his development is a little more like up and down. And you're hoping at some point that it goes up, right? Like, that is just a steady level up. And that hasn't happened for him yet. But we know that he can play defense. We know this because we saw it for a full fucking season. Like, we know he can do that. And the real question is, can he get his brain wrapped around that and accept that, like, I am the third option currently, and deservedly, because he's not good enough offensively to justify taking away usage from Brunson, taking away usage from Randall. He has to earn that. He has to earn the usage. And part of earning that is excelling in his role. And part of excelling in his role is going to be, can you not be a piece of shit on defense? Can you go get me a contested rebound? You know? And we've seen basketball games the Knicks have lost flat out because RJ Barrett didn't get a contested rebound. I don't like boiling a game down to one play or one guy, but like, we've seen that. So like, the heart move, I think, is going to pay dividends in multiple ways, because I do think it gives RJ Barrett very specifically a kick in the ass that he needed. And then, like, not in a way of like, but better watch out, like, you're going to ride the bench. Like, I saw all kinds of crazy people like, oh, like, now that we have Hart, we should put RJ on the bench. I'm like, that's insane, actually. That's not what you should do. But like, I get the sentiment, and the sentiment played out in some of these endgame situations, right, where he's gone with Hart over RJ. So like, he needs to just, whatever he's done the last two games, that's what he needs. He'd like bottle that up and do that for the rest of time. That would be great. Because if he does that, again, like you mentioned, this team becomes much more problematic for anybody to deal with in the playoffs. And it also just benefits the franchise so much long term. Because, like, there's kind of like, now that you've reached this level of good, I think, Simon, we've talked about this before too. Like, once you're at a certain level of good, you kind of have to like be aggressive about like improving and getting better and getting better. Like, we've seen this with Boston, right? Like, they traded for Derek White last year. They traded for Brogdon over the offseason. They traded for Muscala this year, which I think was actually a nice little pickup. But like,
big Muscala fans here on Pod Strickland.
Yeah. Nah, he's a good player, but he's like
legit.
Yeah, but like they've been aggressive about, okay, we're actually really good, and so now we're going to just keep adding win now pieces. And like with the Knicks, like now that they're this good, it's like I understand why there's like, well, if RJ's not good enough, then maybe we should use him to go get somebody who's better. But it's like, to me, I'm still of the opinion that you save, if you're going to trade RJ, you have to save that for like, people are talking about like OG Anunoby. Get the fuck out of here with OG Anunoby. Like, all right, I'm not trading RJ Barrett for a guy who dribbles about as well as I do. Like, I'm sorry, that's ridiculous. Like, I'm not doing that.
It looked yesterday from the box and from the couple clips I saw that that he was passing well.
Yeah, RJ. He was passing well. Like, and
the,
like
That's the biggest thing that, like, I mean, Hart is obviously a great passer in his own right, but he's
Hart, a different thing.
Hart is not bending the defense to pass. He's just finding the seams. RJ can find the seams and also, like he's the best alley-oop thrower on the team, right? Like, it's kind of funny.
Maybe the only alley-oop thrower on the team.
It is so weird, man. Like, I remember we used to joke back in the Kristaps days with his point guards that I'm like, this guy is, like, 8 feet tall and jumps, like, 40 inches in the air, and he has, like, one alley-oop per month. And, you know, Mitch still gets plenty of dunks because of the O rebounds and because Grimes is the drop-off king, but, like, damn, we can't just have a regular old-fashioned pick and roll with our gigantic jumping seven-footer, like, and just throw him the ball where the other guy, like, old-ass 300-pound Jonas Valanciunas can't get it. Can we try that?
I feel like there's, for some reason, been a, like, de-emphasis in players developing lob throwing. Like, I feel like there's less guys in the league that can do it. Or maybe there's also less, like, traditional lob targets, but the Knicks obviously have a couple great ones. I do want to go back to what you were saying, Schwinn, because like I think to me it seems like the team's in a good place, but also like the major decision, and I don't know where you guys stand on this, is like they obviously don't have that like title contending number one guy. And I think that you kind of have to figure out who between like RJ and Julius can scale down better. I know Julius has had trouble with that in the past. I think he does, obviously he can do some things off ball, but he thrives with the ball. RJ obviously, I think to a greater extent right now, needs the ball. He's like less efficient and scalable in that way. But I think in concept, he's a more scalable player with his defensive upside and like slashing, cutting ability. Like, I don't know. I think there is like the connective tissue is there for him. It's just not necessarily present right now. But obviously he also has the greater trade value if you're going to go get that guy. And like you said, if you're going to trade him, it has to be for that like finishing piece. Because that's really like the main thing the team is lacking. I'm just curious where you come down on that. And like, if you do, like if you move one of those guys, like who's more likely to kind of complement that player? Obviously
it's not even close to me. Like everything, like Julius Randle is like eons and eons beyond RJ Barrett right now in terms of on the court. And the converse that you mentioned of RJ being so young and therefore having that kind of trade value because most of his growth is still ahead of him, hopefully, kind of makes this a pretty easy call for me personally.
Yeah, I mean, I get, so like it's all this stuff is relative to the price. So like if you're telling me Julius plus two picks can get me like the level, like let's say, you know, Devin Booker, okay, if you told me that versus it would have to be like, oh, but you can also do that. You can also get Devin Booker if you do like RJ and Quickly and four first round picks and two swaps. Like, I'll do the Julius one. You know, like I'll go find out who the power forward is going to be moving forward, like long term. But like, if that's, I'm just giving an example. I right now, like Julius is kind of at this weird level where you're like, I don't like want to fully trust him, but like then he like had like the two games he just played. He fucking had Kuzma and like he had Brandon Ingram last night in fucking hell, like in absolute fucking hell. Like he locked his ass up. Like I've never seen Julius that locked in defensively from the start of a game the way he was last night.
It's not a coincidence too, because Kuzma was talking shit, and then I forgot about that too. Yeah,
I'm telling you, it's so funny. Like all these Lakers guys now, they're all over the league. It's so funny. Like Hart obviously is now on the Knicks. He's
tracking them down like fucking Arya in Game of Thrones, making a list of just people to murder.
We've talked about this forever. Like one of the most frustrating parts about Julius Randle throughout his career is that like he's not a good defender, but when he actually gives a fuck, he's legitimately a terrifying, game changing potential defender. And like these last few games, and honestly the stretch he's had defensively since Mitch got hurt, and now Mitch is back, which is great. But like since Mitch got hurt, he's been. Honestly, no qualifiers, no caveats. He's been great defensively. He's been great. Like, genuinely showing consistent effort, especially given, like, the usage he's on offensively and his role offensively. It's been really impressive. So, like, he's almost, like, honestly, I don't think it's absurd to say so far this season Julius Randle has been a top 15 player. I think he's been the best player on the team. I do think Brunson is, like, the best player, but that's more of, like, in the last 6 minutes of the game, I need Julius to not be on the ball. Like Julius needs to hang out and let Brunson do his thing. But like
Brunson is part of the reason Julius can be this great, and it works out that way. And one of the things that I think gets lost, because they're like we've talked about it, right? Julius is volatile, and it really goes in both directions. It's not just
the most insane player I've ever had to root for.
it's just not
crazy.
Just like from a pure player development standpoint, if you're just thinking about like how does Julius Randle get better, right? Like obviously consistent defensive effort is one thing, but he actually has like other significant, not high hanging fruit. I don't want to say low hanging fruit, but not high hanging fruit. Offense
basic,
as well.
Some basic decision making would go a long, long way for him.
Yeah, and my favorite thing that he's done in the last month or so is like something that Jason Tatum does as good as anybody in the league. Most of these like ridiculous, insane MVP vote guys do it, but like they use their size and athleticism and moves with purpose. They're not like figuring this shit out as they go, like me playing 21 trying to figure out how the fuck I'm gonna get to the hoop. It's like I'm gonna do this, and then I'm gonna do a cross, and then there's nothing you're gonna be able to do about it, and you're just gonna have to deal with that, and help defense is gonna have to come. What Julius would do before, even when he was playing well, would be like he would do a cross, and then he would do the thing where it's like half post up, half face up, and he kind of just ambles into the paint because he's too strong. And it works because he's so strong and his ball handling is all right. But like, that's different from just being like, I'm going to dismiss the first player and then I'm going to dismiss the second player, which is like, every time I watch Jason Tatum and he's not just like turning into a 3-point chucker, I'm just like, how is anybody supposed to stop him? Because nobody can stay in front of him. And he's like 6'9". Like
it's very hard to stay in front of Jason Tatum because people don't know this. But there's a clause in the CBA where Jason Tatum is allowed to just forearm shiver guys every time he drives to the hoop.
Julius could get in on somebody's guy in the league is SGA. No. By the way, I don't think it's
perfect. Yeah, no, he's pretty good SGA, at it.
He's like,
yes,
him, Tatum. I'm missing a third player. I forget. There was somebody else who's like really. Not oblivious, obvious about that. Anyway, my point is like, you know, Julius can get, he can become a better shooter. He can become a better driver. He can become a better passer. There's lots of stuff that's very well on the table. And if you stick him if he remains for the entry of whatever MVP player it is, right? Like if the situation is correct and some other people get traded or whatever, like just like we see Jaylen, helping optimize him, it's possible that another player also does that. And like in terms of his off-ball synergy, really, I think Julius has been probably, aside from Grimes, the best cutter on the team, and he's certainly the most willing 3-point shooter on the team. Maybe not the best, but the most willing.
He also apparently is just going to dunk on everybody now, which is great.
He's a ridiculous 1-foot jumper. I don't know, like I think he definitely hit that point in like an insane athlete's life where he's like, I'm actually too jacked. Like, this is too much. And I need to, like LeBron hit that point when he was in Miami, and he was like, all right, I'm playing power forward, so I'm going to be 265, 270 pounds. And then he realized, like, oh, this is probably a little much. Like, that's what happened with Julius. He's probably clocking in right now at, like, a light, slim 245, if I had to guess.
Yeah, he looks very svelte, is the word I would use. But, like, yeah, I mean, just to go back to what you were talking about, Simon, like, Julius is just at this weird point where I don't even understand, like, what I'm supposed to do with him in a trade. Like, I just don't know. And then I'm like, should I even trade this guy? Like, he's playing at this level that makes no sense. But then I'm like,
I have no idea what his value is.
And then you're like, but like last year he was insane. Like, so maybe is he gonna be insane again? Like, I just still have no concept of like,
yeah, his value is higher, probably higher to the Knicks than other teams. But then, like, at the same time, the Knicks obviously do have to, like, add that, like, you know, right, that final piece, right? So it just gets tricky.
Before we continue this discussion, though, NBA fans, it's time to bring the hoops action to the palm of your hand with DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. This week, new customers can bet $5 and win $200 in bonus bets instantly. Plus, for a limited time, all new and existing customers can get a no-sweat same-game parlay every day. Go to the DraftKings Sportsbook app today, opt in, and place a same-game parlay on any NBA game. And if it doesn't hit, you'll get a bonus bet back. Own the app now and sign up with code TBPN. New customers can bet $5 on the NBA and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. Only at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA, with code TBPN. Minimum age and eligibility restrictions apply. See show notes.
So my thing with that is like, and they have to make that move at some point. Like, but it's like, at some point, like that, yeah. You can't force that move, which is what, like, all these, you know, there are people like
DeJounte Murray's not that move.
Yeah, DeJounte Murray's not that move. But like, there are people like at the deadline, right? Like, oh well, if we could get Zach LaVine, if we could get OG Anunoby, if we could get, and I'm like, these are not the guys. Like, these are not the guys that, like, all, like, OG Anunoby is a good player. All he's gonna do for you is make sure that you never get past the second round as currently constructed. Which, yeah, like, maybe you can already just do that right now and keep the 22-year-old kid who has way more offensive upside than OG Anunoby ever will. I don't care. You can throw the numbers at me. It doesn't matter to me. I know RJ Barrett doesn't pass enough, but I know that he can pass. And sometimes it just takes guys a little longer. Like, Jason Tatum all of a sudden just started passing one day. It was like, oh shit, yeah, I can do this. I can get like 5 assists a game. This isn't that hard. Like, it just clicks sometimes at a certain point. And I'm just going to bet on that with RJ for right now. And the point is, like, I don't think the Knicks need to operate. Like, yes, the Knicks should always, like, now that you have these, you know, a solid team, you need to be thinking about how to always improve it and stay, you know, in that upper, you know, be in that conversation, hopefully at the top of the East at some point. But, like, to do that, you still have to be judicious. And, like, that's the one thing of this front office I don't think they get nearly enough credit for. From either the local beat, national beat, whatever, they've actually exhibited a shit ton of patience. And I think
they never sell low on anyone ever.
Yeah, and not just patience, but also like patience without being cowardly, right? Like, it would have been easy to sit there at this trade deadline and be like, you know what, a first round pick for Josh Hart is too much, and we think this team is good anyway, so let's just let it roll and see what happens. That would have been an easy thing to do. But they were like, you know what, this team is good. Let's go get Josh Hart because we think he can make us XYZ this much better. And we'll risk a first-round pick this year, a lotto-protected first-round pick, which doesn't have any future. Like, it either conveys this year or we keep it and then get 4 seconds. Like, it's a move that is like, yeah, you're trading a first-round pick for a non-star. Should we do this? Does it make the Knicks the contender? Like, maybe it doesn't make the Knicks a contender, but you're a lot closer now.
And you're closer than you were before the trade. Like, probably could get you more than a first-round pick if you have to move him in another deal, like this summer or something.
He's probably more valuable than the lotto. Like, you know what I mean? Like, in a trade, yeah, like, if you're trading for a star, what we've seen now for most star trades, other than the stupid Houston Harden. I don't really mind the Houston Harden one, but they didn't get any players from that trade, right? They didn't get anything. Like, they just got picks and basically cap flexibility.
But most of the time,
when you're trading, matching salary, like,
yeah,
that's a value contract and matching salary. And clearly,
and teams want players.
Yeah.
Teams like want players now when they are doing these deals. They don't, and not because they don't want to bottom out, but it's also because they're like you just mentioned, well, we can get more, we can trade Hart down the line for a first round pick. So that's another value for us in that trade. So, like, yeah, like, I agree. The Hart thing is just, but my point is, like, going back to the front office, is just like, you know, they got shit on, they got a lot of shit for not trading for Donovan Mitchell, right? Especially at the start of this season. And I think that their patience, I still believe that it was the right call to not trade for Donovan Mitchell. I still believe that. And I think they are showing that, like, they've been rewarded for kind of drawing a line in the sand and being like, mm-hmm. Danny Ainge, we are not going to do the deal. Like, we're not going to let you destroy us and take everything from, like, you know, pillage the franchise. Like, we're not doing that. You know, this is our line in the sand, and that's it.
What they do a good job doing is, I think a lot of people online and other fans, like, we can talk about what is Josh Hart worth, what is a first round pick worth, what is a protected first round pick worth, but these things, the same thing is not going to be worth the same to different teams in different situations, right? And we saw this last year with the Knicks draft pick. They, much to my chagrin, traded the 11th pick for three protected picks. You almost certainly will never see a first go for that many protected picks. The only reason they were able to do it is because the Thunder really had designs on that pick, and they had so many protected picks that those protected picks were worth less to them than they would be to other teams. So it made sense. And the Josh Hart trade was the same thing. Yes, they traded a first and Cam for, so, like, in a way, they traded two firsts, right? Even though that Cam pick is, you know,
looking
probably
like,
a lesser
looking
first.
Like 2 seconds.
Right, looking like 2 seconds. Talk soon.
Unless my son Mark Williams has something to say about it.
That's true. He is chefing. Shout out to Mark Williams. I got to pick him up in fantasy before the end of this pod. I was like 20 rebounds. Fuck. Especially because I have mixtape Mace, and he may have been whack in real life, but he was putting up 20 and 10 for my fantasy team. Anyway, my point is, like, the Knicks don't have the capacity to intake two rookies. They don't. They just don't. You can't just draft a guy unless you're going to stash them, or unless you're completely okay just G-leaguing them for the whole year. And they're a true project, which those kind of prospects are much more rare than you think. And even if there is a good pick who is a true project, maybe this front office doesn't feel like that's a good fit for what they're trying to do, right? So, like, that extra first round pick did not... if you asked this front office, like, would you rather have traded this first round pick or four random second rounders for Josh Hart, they would have said the first. Because you can use those second rounders for, like, 9,000 different things, but this first, you have a ticking clock to use it between now and the draft, and if they didn't do it, they were going to be stuck, and another team, some Danny Ainge-ass motherfucker GM, was going to probably know that they were stuck and just take advantage of them. So they struck while the iron was hot. They understand relative value, which is something that, you know, that not every team understands, right? Like, you see a lot of teams acquire talent without really thinking about how the talent fits in to their game plan, right? And Simon, I'm sure y'all have thought about this as Warriors fans between Wiseman and Moody and Poole and these dudes.
The Wiseman trade, great trade for the Warriors. They got an actual good NBA player for James Wiseman. Congratulations.
Yeah.
Wait, who did they get again?
They got Gary Payne II. He just needs to be
healthy. Oh yeah. What's his deal? When is he going to play?
Supposedly he's maybe not as injured as it seemed initially, but I also think at this point, like, I would just be super cautious. Like, if he might need a surgery, just, like, do the second surgery, because I don't think he's, you know, tilting it to them repeating this year. But yeah, no, I mean, the Wiseman situation was, like, one thing that I will give. I mean, I'll give Bob Myers credit for a lot of things. Like, I think Bob Myers is a fucking great GM. But one thing that I think he, like, doesn't really get credit for that's one of the most important things a GM can do, is
biting the bullet.
Biting the bullet and like just admitting their mistakes. Like he, you could look at the GP2 trade and be like, okay, well, if you had just, you know, been willing to pay the tax bill and sign GP2 in the off season, then you could have traded Wiseman for those picks and kept those picks, or you could have traded him for something else or whatever. So that's like, you could look at that as an L, but the thing is like every team makes mistakes. Like there's not a GM in the league that bats 1,000, and to be able to like do a move that, like, the optics on this Wiseman trade aren't good. They do highlight like, A, we made a bad pick. Like we used the number 2 pick on this guy and we're trading him in his third season. Like we are admitting defeat there, and we're trading him for a guy that we could have just kept if we had re-signed him in the offseason. So like you can spin that as like egg on his face, but he doesn't really give a fuck, right? He's just like, yeah, okay, I made a bad pick and I am realizing that like GP2 was essential to our defense. Like we need that super high-end point of attack defender to stop guys like Andrew Nembhard from dropping 35 on us on like a, you know, every other night basis. So I give him a lot of credit for that. I think it was smart to bring Peyton back. I think, you know, he has the 2 years left on his deal after this. And Dante DiVincenzo is probably a guy who's going to go get paid elsewhere after the year he's had. So they kind of need to, DiVincenzo was like the Peyton replacement, and they kind of need to replace him now. And I think that was a proactive way to do it. I mentioned Jordan Poole earlier. So we're talking about these young guys, and Poole is obviously one that looks like a hit. And like, to get a player like that at 28 is obviously a home run. But I'm curious what you guys think. I'm kind of the opinion this year that like, there's no place for him on a winning team. Or if there is a place, there's not a place for him at,
it's not the place he wants.
It's not the place he wants. Right. He was excellent during a lot of the playoff run last year. But the problem is that when you face like the elite teams, when they faced Boston, which like, I'm sorry, was kind of the only elite team they faced. That's just how I feel about the
Grizzlies. Look at this Grizzlies. Look at this Grizzlies slander.
Yeah, no, but
Jaw stands are gonna get you for this one.
But like he was playing behind Peyton in that series. He was playing like 20 minutes or less, and the reason is just because it's what you said earlier. It's like once you have a couple guys ahead of you in the pecking order, you can't be that much of a negative on defense. And he is such a poor defender. He's made a couple minor strides this year, but he's still just such a bad defender and so turnover prone for a player who's not actually like a high like level playmaker. He's not setting guys up. His turnovers are out of like isolation. I don't think I've ever seen a player be this turnover prone out of isolation. And that's not even counting the times that he drives with like a clear shot blocker right there and gets blocked in a way that everyone can see except for him somehow. Those don't even count as turnovers, and his turnover numbers are still super high. I just don't think he has a place like above a sixth man on a contender, and he's making $30 million a year. So like that's where I think I think that is actually what, and you can see maybe some signs of the team starting to feel that way. Like Steph, obviously there was the Steph mouthpiece incident. Klay Thompson the other night kind of shooed him off of the.
That was so funny. Klay's like, dude, no, like,
yeah, wait, no. Time out. What happened? I still haven't caught the highlights. Poole
stepped
crazy
up to
game.
The line to take a technical, and Klay like stood there for a minute, like thinking about it, and then just walked up to him and like was like, you gotta move.
Yeah, like, no,
play your role, playboy.
Yeah. Yeah,
I got four of them things. Right? Yeah, you got one.
And, you're a good shooter. You ain't like this though.
Exactly. And I think that's like, I think that that's kind of I don't know. I think that's part of the problem is like his mentality and attitude is a bit like he's already earned it.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Related to this? Obviously, Draymond overstepped his bounds there.
Yeah.
But do you feel like Draymond just like he was feeling himself in training camp, like Jordan Poole, I'm saying?
Yeah.
And Draymond was like, fuck this guy.
Yeah, 100%.
100%.
I mean, there's no like justification for what Draymond did. But like that can be true, and at the same time, like the reason underneath it was like I think something that made sense, right? It's like you that's not how you respond to that frustration, but the frustration I think is something he was feeling, and I think that it kind
he's
of
not alone. It relates a bit
to the KD Draymond incident from like KD's final year, where
that. Like Draymond, this is a question for you, that Draymond, while he has overstepped his bounds in a couple of scenarios, that he's expressing something that most of the rest of the team feels as well?
Yeah, exactly. I think he's always right when he does that. And it's not necessarily doesn't mean
wrong,
he should do
wrong
it.
Wrong tone.
but yeah, like Draymond just gets it, like more than any player on the team. Like he gets what makes the team win, and when he like feels a certain way about it, he's wired to express it. And I think that, you know, Steph obviously has some of that too. He expresses it differently, but that's I think where his kind of blow up was coming from earlier this year. There's just a lot of like talk about, is Draymond gonna stay past the season, is Bob Myers leaving, you know, is this kind of like the beginning of the end for their run? And I don't know. I don't think they see it that way. I think that given what I was saying earlier about Myers, like I think he knows. I think everyone kind of knows what the problems are and what the strengths still are. And I wouldn't be surprised to see them explore moves.